Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Welcome into another edition of Football 52. I am Brady Hull. We've got UNC head coach Ed Lamb. And coach, my friend, I know it's Wednesday and we need to be turning the page. We need to be looking at South Dakota, but I haven't had a chance to talk to you since everything went down over the weekend. Can I just flat out ask, you know, Carver Cheeks, I had him on the show, my show yesterday. I just asked him to start the interview. Was it a catch? I'm going to go ahead and ask you that, coach, if we can start that way.
No, I mean, the easy answer is no, because the catch is what the official calls it. And, right. I mean, some of the officials thought it was a catch, and one did not, at least one did not. And I can acknowledge it's controversial. I'm comfortable going on Wednesdays and talking about the previous game because that's what I do every week. We have, this later on today, I'll do our press conference, and we'll talk a little bit about the previous game and a lot about the next game. And so, I'm comfortable just saying it was controversial. As I told our team, we won on the internet. How long are you going to keep checking the internet for validation that we won on the internet? It's meaningless, and it's time to move on. We have we've got a tough opponent this next week. And we had, if we do want to look at last week, let's look at the previous offensive drive before our last drive, our penultimate drive. We had a chance to put the game away. There was 5 minutes left and a couple of first downs, and we're running away with that game. And then same defensively. You know, if we get a stop there on our last defensive drive, we win the game going away. So that's what I want our team to take away from that more than anything.
I know you're going to go here on this. I'm going to ask you. You don't care about the internet stuff. You don't. This game was on altitude. So again, a bunch of Colorado people are watching this game. I monitor other radio stations and television stations, all that stuff. And Monday morning, it's UNC got robbed. What's Ed Lamb got going over there? It's a bunch of that stuff. Other than just me talking about the Bears, that doesn't do anything for you, though, does it?
No, that does. It hits a little more home. I've heard from so many high school coaches in the state, and that hits home in a big way because that's, you know, we've been going out and recruiting their players, and they've all been so appreciative of that. And they want us to win, and we know that, and we feel that, and yet we've had so little on-field success that I think it's only natural human nature for anybody to kind of question, okay, are we ever going to get there? Is this going to work? It's great that my high school players are, you know, a high school coach could think it's great that my high school players are going to UNC, but will they have any success? Will they enjoy their time there? And I think, the same result on the field that we've largely gotten, but it seems like some people are encouraged by the effort and the execution and the way that our guys played the game. And from that perspective, I'm proud of them, but I have been on several other occasions too where I thought we've worked hard, prepared hard, and played well and just didn't win.
Coach, you guys were 36.5, I believe, point underdogs. I don't know if you pay attention to any of that stuff, but you were leading 99% of the game. And in my mind, you know, it was a catch, and then it shouldn't have been overturned. Like, that's where I'm going to live with that forever. But you end up losing 21-17. Is there a way you come out of that? Is there a moral victory in your mind at all, knowing that you were almost 40-point underdogs to a team that won 8 games last year in the Mountain West? They were a game away from being in their championship game. They're a bowl team. Their resources are much different than your resources. Is there any walking out of there with that was somewhat successful or not even close because it was a loss at the end of the day?
We're completely aware of the challenges and the fact that we were underdogs. I don't know that any of our staff or players were aware of the point spread. It's just not our world, really.
Yeah.
But you know, I would think that my coaching record against the spread is a lot better than my on-field record. So it's kind of in some ways it's business as usual. You know, I was hired here to punch above our weight, and we're going to continue to strive to do that. We understand the challenge.
Oh, and you guys did that. You were up 10-0 at the half. You get forced all those turnovers. What was it, 5 turnovers? But then there was the turnover on downs too. So impressed with what you guys were able to do, and I want to get into some of the details. Eric Gibson Jr., obviously Carver Cheeks, but can I on the catch one last time, and then I'll put it to bed, and I won't bug you with it anymore. What's going through your head? Because I wasn't able to see. I'm at the game. I did make it to the game, so I wasn't. I need glasses. I can't look across the field and see your reaction. And they didn't show the replay on the stadium there, so we didn't get to see that. They showed every other replay, which was interesting. What's going through your head during this review process, and then once it's ultimately ruled incomplete?
I'll take you back. The feeling of victory was there, right? Mm-hmm. I saw the official signal touchdown. There's 8 seconds left. We've got a great kickoff guy. We're not worried about getting kickoffs returned. You know, he can put it through the uprights from the opposite 35-yard line. And we've got – and 8 seconds is just a infinitesimally small chance for somebody to drive the ball 70 or push the ball 75 yards, right? Yeah. We have defenses that are aligned for that. There would have to be some type of fluke. So I think every UNC fan felt – a victory. Every UNC player and coach felt a victory, and every CSU affiliated person, you know, felt the sting of a loss there. And then my attention went to Carver because he was down, and I didn't know why he was down. And I did not see anything, at least from my vantage point, that the flag on the field would be something against us. And so I thought it wasn't a DPI, defensive pass interference. So I wasn't really paying attention to that. So I walked out, as I always do if we've got a player down. I walk out and check on them in person if they're down for more than a few moments. And so I went out there and was talking to him. And then I became aware that they were reviewing it, the officials were reviewing it in more detail than you normally would. So every touchdown is always reviewed. That's maybe something that some people wouldn't understand. So it's not that the replay official inserted himself into that moment. He was always going to be in that moment, and he has to certify that there's nothing that would be reviewable. He saw something that was reviewable, and then it went into an official review instead of kind of the unofficial practice of reviewing every touchdown. So at that point, I knew that we were either going to have a win that would be really emotional or a loss that would be really emotional. And so I went up and down our sideline saying, after the game, we're classy. Remember who we are. I just wanted to remind our players that win or lose, we're not running across their field and stealing their Gatorade buckets and stuff like that and talking a bunch of mess. But the same with a loss. We're not going after the officials. We're just going to be composed. And so that was my first priority in that moment. Like, we had played as well as we were going to play. The game was essentially over at that point. Either way. And then when the official that's charged with communicating to me, which are the ones that are on my sideline, that changes at halftime, so you get both sideline sets of officials, one of them came up and said, hey, coach, we're taking it off. It was ruled not a catch. And I said, you're serious, aren't you? Just because it was so late and so awkward, and it was could have been such a huge victory. And I usually have a little bit of friendly banter with the officials on our sideline. And I thought he was going to say, you know, I'm just messing with you. You know, because it just didn't – like, I saw it happen.
Yeah.
Right? There's no – it's the old irrefutable evidence. Like, it doesn't matter that the ball was moving. That the ball can move on any catch.
Yeah.
The ball can move around.
His hands under it.
Yeah. So just from my perspective, right, it just didn't seem real for a moment. And then I could see the look on his face. And all this probably happened in like 1.5 seconds, right? My realization that this is real. And then it just became about, okay, well, there's 8 seconds left. And then he said, and there's a unsportsmanlike foul on the play as well. And I thought, oh, great. We're going to get it even closer. You know, CSU lost their composure. And he said, so we're taking it back 15. And I said, wait, it's on us? because I didn't see that, you know. And then in the video later, I did see that Carver he did something he shouldn't have done. It wasn't something that would always be called. He just kind of shushed the crowd.
Seen it all the time not
yeah,
be called.
Exactly. And, you know, they had touchdowns where their guys were knocking on heads and dancing, you know. So I didn't – you know, I didn't see it is the point. There's a learning moment there for Carver and for all of us because we could have had a shot from closer in, and we were playing with a lot of confidence at that point.
Yeah.
And they had we been 15 yards closer, they would not have been able to get into their – sag or prevent defense where they had a bunch of guys standing back there in the end zone, they would have had to cover the whole field a little more.
Yeah, I mean, and the shushing of the crowd, give me a break, it's sports, it's fun. I saw it, and then I saw the flag go up. First off, it did also look like it was pass interference. LaMondre Joe, he's a fine football player, but it did look like he had Carver Cheeks' shoulder as we're going down, but that was missed. I guess at the end of the day, whether you think it was a catch or you don't, when you watch those replays, and I've seen 4 million people send still images of all this, and they're so blurry, you can't tell me looking at that you can guarantee his hand is not under that football.
Or even a finger. I mean, you can take a ball right now in your chest and stomach and roll it around with one finger. So they're – yeah, I didn't see that either.
It's
controversial.
Yeah. I mean, very controversial. And it was – I'm leaving the stadium – and I'm trying to get out in front of everybody, and I'm listening to the fans. And I mean, I'm mainly Rams fans as I'm walking through because the Bears fans are hanging out at the stadium probably a little bit more. The discussion surrounding these fans was insane to me, Coach. And I've been going to a lot of games for a lot of years, and it was very much the Bears deserve to win that game. I've never heard that a fan base of the other team talk like that. So what I think is cool at the end of the day, and we discussed this, is I think there's going to be a lot of people that are paying attention to what you do. I've seen this on the basketball side. When Steve Smiley's team goes in and puts up a great game or beats CSU, suddenly people are like, what are they doing over there? So it wasn't a win, but there were a lot, and I don't know if this gives you any comfort, but there were a lot of really good things that came from this, but now we'll see what it does for you guys the rest of the way.
Sure. Yeah, public perception is a big part of our the reality of our business in college sports. And I can acknowledge that. And so I'm happy about that. But there are things to build on from every game, every loss, every win. There are things to improve. And that's really where our mind is at, is just completely moving on to South Dakota. We did not – I've said it in here so many times before. We did not come in and build this program to go 6-6. We recruited high school players to develop them over a long period of time because that's just the necessity. You're not going to put 45 pounds of muscle on a high school player in 1 year and expect to compete in the Big Sky. But, okay, our guys are getting older now. They're more mature. They're developing. I think we're starting to see some early fruits of that, and that's exciting. But we've still got work to do, and we've still got a long way to go. And a CSU victory didn't win a championship. I told our team before the season, we have one goal, to win a championship. That's it. And so a CSU victory could have been a setback. We could still be basking in the glory of a non-conference victory. You know, it only happens to mean a lot around here because this is, you know, geographically we're really close to CSU, and we get a lot of we get a lot of their crossover media and stuff like that. But, you know, around the country, UNC beating CSU maybe wasn't going to be that big of a deal.
Yeah.
We've got conference starting in 3 weeks, and we want to be prepared for that.
The fact that you didn't end up winning this game, you kind of mentioned it there. Is that something where, yeah, you obviously want to win every single game, but you didn't in a crazy fashion. Is that something that you look at as maybe that's a driver? If you win that game, who knows? Maybe guys mentally are like, we just beat an FBS team that was in a bowl last year that has – they're going to the Pac-12. They have all these big expectations. But you got that close. Many guys would say you got robbed. You can really use that now going forward as a driving force for the rest of the season, especially once you get into Big Sky play.
It's possible. You know, I know you're just saying it colloquially when you say you can use that. I haven't used that. with our players. But I do think that our players felt good about having a chance to win. If I would have came in here last Wednesday and said, yeah, we'll be there late, we'll lose on a controversial call late in the game, you might have been like, hey, great confidence, coach, you know, and not really believe that. So I think – I get what you're saying, and I think our players can carry that, but they can also carry overconfidence, and that's the wonderful thing about sports and especially football. If you need to be humbled, you will, and I hope that we don't need that. I hope that we're not overconfident. I hope that we're not thinking, you know, if we're let me put it this way: if we're thinking, hey, all we got to do is keep playing like we did at CSU, we've already lost all the rest of our games because every team on our schedule will come in and give CSU all they can handle.
Yeah, South Dakota might be one of those teams.
That's right.
It's a very good football team. Coach, you do all this. We got the news last week. Peter Castelli, maybe out for the season, maybe not. Eric Gibson Jr. comes in. And even before, because he ended up throwing for 160 yards, but even when he was at the 50-yard mark or something, he wasn't airing it out. He wasn't throwing it up and down the field, but I thought he was so smart with the football. Now, he had that fumble, obviously, in the second half, but he just seemed poised. This is a big moment for him. He's getting his first start with the Bears, and he's on their Ag Day. It's like a homecoming almost. There's a lot of fans in the stands, a lot of orange. I thought he was extremely composed. What were your thoughts on Mr. Gibson Jr.?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts on that. First, strategically, we've played with a two-score lead almost this entire season, almost two entire games at this point. We've led for all but 40 seconds of the season, right? And a lot of that with a two-score lead. And so we've called a very conservative game, and our quarterbacks understand, okay, two-score lead, there's a different criteria for pulling out an RPO, for throwing passes down the field into coverage. And then you saw late what he's capable of and what our receivers are capable of when it's time to press and it's time to push the ball down the field. And so I'm excited about being in situations where we could use that. And it's not always just being down. Getting up by three scores is a great time to really push for four and five, because if you take an undue risk and get stung, you're still up by two scores. So we just haven't been able to push games to three scores, and we haven't been in the one score of games very, very often. Eric did a great job of, we call it in the management of a game situationally. And that's what he's done since day one he stepped on campus. He's one of our best leaders. As the backup quarterback, he was clearly named the backup quarterback. He had the third most votes on the offense for captain. And so it's really clear what he brings. And you can see his composure, I think, just watching a game.
You guys had some other injuries too throughout the game, also at the running back position. Can you give us any updates there, Coach? Any good news?
Yeah, it looks like we could potentially get Peter Castelli back at some point during the season. You saw our starting running back from game one was out as well. Matthias Price, we expect to have him back. And then Hank Gibbs was all, he's been such a big part of what we do, our wildcat package and short yardage quarterback. And he was out as well. So we were dealing with a lot of bumps and bruises in the game. We had two starting offensive linemen out, lost another one during the game. AJ, he should be back. He started at left guard for us, right guard for us. He should be back at some point during the season, we hope. But there are several guys right now that are on that kind of probable to doubtful list.
Happens fast too.
Once
you get into the season. I didn't bring this up specifically with, I had Carver Cheeks on yesterday, Coach, but you and I, when we first, I think of a whirlwind of a summer, he sat right where you're sitting in this podcast studio and we talked to him about the season, all that stuff. And then like a week later, he enters the transfer portal.
Right.
And then like 2 weeks after that or 3 weeks after that, he's like, maybe this isn't for me. And we kind of know your rule. And then it's like, well, you got to earn your way back up. When we first had that discussion about he's entering the transfer portal, if you would have said, yeah, he's going to be involved in a very controversial end of game play against the Colorado State Rams, I would have thought you're crazy, because we all kind of counted him out and thought he was gone. He was going to be somewhere else. But can you talk a little bit about his journey and where he is? Because clearly he is the number one target on this offense, and he is a very vital player to this football team.
Sure. Everybody who's watching saw what everyone on our team already knows about Carver is that he believes in himself and he's 100% about the team. And I think that was the whole dynamic with entering the transfer portal. He believed in himself, believed that he could play anywhere in the country. He didn't come and talk to me first because I would have acknowledged that, but told him that the transfer portal isn't what most people think it is. You don't just get in the portal and then whatever level you can play at, you're going to get an opportunity. Most of the Power Five and Group of Five is recruiting only off of the internet right now, which means they're not going out and scouring video and names and finding the best players they can find. They want their 247 ranking to be high, and so they have to recruit highly rated 247 players. And so it's very easy. All players need to do is check their transfer portal ranking to figure out where they're going to be.
Yeah.
But a testament to Carver, because when he figured that out and he only had basically lateral moves, he said, I'm not doing that to my team. And I said, well, I can't do it to my team and our team, where a guy can just go and check it out and come back for free. You've got to walk on and earn it. He knows, as all of our players do, that we keep scholarships available for in-season adjustments. Guys that are stepping into roles that we didn't anticipate, walk-ons that are playing starting roles. Any starting player should be on scholarship. And so it's a big part of really most college football programs, that you keep a scholarship or two in your back pocket so that you can award the guys that earn it on the field. And so certainly at this point, Carver's doing everything to show that on and off the field.
So what's his status, right? I mean, is it still in the prove it stage, in the earn it stage? Is that kind of still where he is?
No, I told him actually after the game, I said, I think this is the right time. And because we had talked about it all summer, and you know, he was really working hard. He's working extra. He was doing everything he could, attitude, energy, leadership wise. And I think part of it was, hey coach, I got some bills coming up. And you know, I told him at that time, look, I think it's important that you prepare to pay those bills like any walk-on would. I think it's important that you start to pay those bills like any walk-on would. And I think it's important that you deliver in games. I think that's what your teammates want to see. And I want this to be a moment that everybody celebrates, not a moment where your teammates go, oh, they just had a deal the whole time. Mm-hmm. He just went in the portal, came back. Lamb told him to get him a scholarship.
Yeah,
I think Carver's proved he's a scholarship-worthy player again.
Yeah, 100%. Final note on this one, Coach. We talked about it off the podcast a bit, but do you need to hear from the Mountain West at all on what they saw to overturn that, or are you done?
No. Early in my coaching career, I did turn in calls. I wanted explanations. I wanted further explanations. And I'm to the point now where I could write the explanations. I could give the press release. It's going to say something about that the on-field or the replay official has the final say. It's going to say something if they were going to do it, if they were going to take the time to do it, it would say something about they would quote the rule it would be basically a bunch of words that don't have any meaning, and it really puts them in a position. There's really nothing they could say at this point. They can't go back. I mean, even if they went back and said, hey, it was UNC wins. Well, if I was Jay Norvell and their folks, I'd say, wait a minute, we had 8 seconds.
Yeah.
What about that?
Yeah, we got to get back out for 8 seconds.
Yeah, it's not that they ever would, reverse the result of the game, but it's just every game – both teams have a lot of breaks. There are more than one controversial call. And so I just can't – we're not going there. You know what I mean? I have no need for that. In fact, I think it would be a major distraction. I worry about our players listening to this. We've now spoke for 29 minutes of
– Yeah, that's my fault.
Of our podcast. Well, you're the host, and I – like I said, I'm prepared to talk about the
previous
game.
You knew I was going to – I mean, this is the story. This was the biggest story from the weekend of the teams in the state. I think this story was bigger than the Broncos game, Coach. I think this story is bigger than the Buffs starting quarterback situation. That's phenomenal. I mean, it didn't turn out the right way, but it's still phenomenal.
Yeah, and I'm glad I'm enthusiastic about all the excitement. Yeah, I love it. To answer your question – our president, Andy Feinstein, gave me a call over the weekend and said, I'm getting a lot of texts, phone calls all over the country, media. What do you think? How do you want to handle this going forward? And in the end, he's my boss. He would handle it however he wanted to handle it, and I'd be supportive of that. But I said, hey, look, Andy, from my perspective, he insists on calling him Andy. I've always called a president's president everywhere I've been. And so sometimes I still slip and call him president. He insists on calling him Andy, and I appreciate that sentiment by him. So I said, Andy, at this point, if this is blowing up as much as people say on the internet, and I'm just really not in that world.
Yep.
I said, if this is going viral, it probably from a presidential perspective is about the best thing that could happen. So just leave the controversy out there. Let's get these high school kids in this state thinking that UNC had a shot or should have won or whatever. That's a good thing for us. That's a good thing for our university. And nothing that we say or do is going to change the outcome of that game. And it's really important to me that we move on to a great and preparing for a great South Dakota team.
This is why you're who you are, Coach. Did you ever see the movie Gladiator? Did you ever see that movie?
I did.
Maximus. You remind me of Maximus, and this is why when Caesar's saying you're going to take over all this stuff, and he's like, "No, I belong on the battlefield with my men. I don't want to deal with all this stuff." And he's like, "Yeah, but that's why it has to be you." That was a Maximus moment from you right there, Coach. When most people are like, "Heck yeah, let's go own this. Let's go blow this up. Let's make a big stink about it with the Mountain West." You're like, "I don't." It's out there, fine. Let's move on and prepare for South Dakota. And I love that, man. That's what makes you you. And I think that's what makes so many people want to root for this UNC Bears team.
Thank you for that. One more little piece of context. Those aren't Mountain West officials. And I think that could add some understanding. That's something that I understand. Those are CFO officials that I have a high college football officials. It's a consortium, business, whatever. They hire the officials. They provide them to several of the biggest conferences around the country. They work incredibly hard at what they do. They're very competent. And they're graded and demoted and promoted based on their calls. So if the replay official from that game, if the commissioner of the CFO or the reviewer decided that that was a poor call,
yeah,
he would have been downgraded. And you wouldn't, it wouldn't be a surprise to see him, working in the RMAC next year or not getting as many assignments. So they have – every official has a really high motivation and a really high quality standard. I don't question that.
Well, that is great that you bring that up, because that's been another thing that's been talked about is, that's the Mountain West officials. But you're saying that – and this is why I love this podcast. Yeah. Who better to get this information from than you? These were not Mountain West officials.
Those are CFO officials. They could be working SEC or Big Ten games next week. And typically, that's not how it works. The Mountain West or Group of Five officials kind of get reassigned for that, but that's what they're striving for. They're out there to perform and to perform well, and I understand that. I've been to the summer clinics that they have where they're tested. They get put on a stopwatch. They have to run. They have to pass tests every year, both physical and written. And it's a really difficult. It's not a profession. They have other jobs. So they're doing it. They get a small stipend, but they're doing it because they have a passion for it, and they want to be right.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you bring that up, because again, a lot of people would have taken this opportunity. They're officials and stuff, but you're clearing the air, saying no, that's not what was going. And I actually talked about this yesterday. I was like, even if it was Mountain West officials, Mountain West is not like CSU, so it's not necessarily like they want to help CSU. If they happen to win a conference championship this year, the commissioner of the Mount West does not want to hand that trophy over to Colorado State since they're exiting next year. So that's a fascinating thing. Did you happen to see the Missouri-Kansas thing? Because that had us talking yesterday. Speaking of officials, because in the Big 12, these officials did get demoted because of something they allowed. And I still don't have all the details on it, Coach. But it basically, Missouri scored a touchdown. Kansas blocked the extra point. Missouri goes to kickoff, but they punt the kickoff. And the team just thinks they can do that. The officials allow them to do that, and they were not allowed to do that. So the Big 12, the crew that was on that game, they will be sitting out this weekend because of that. So my brain went there when we were talking about how officials, this whole they're trying to fix it. Well, if they screw up, they get demoted or they lose a week's salary or whatever.
I didn't see that, but it's good that you brought it up because, again, more context for anybody who is caring about this. Major difference between a procedural mistake by the officiating crew and a judgment mistake. A judgment mistake is to be expected. A procedural mistake that costs, you know, one of the teams, you know, a fifth down, something like that. That's a procedural mistake, and that is worthy of suspension. You know, players that make procedural mistakes, you know, targeting, two personal fouls, they're sitting out a game, they're sitting out a half, right?
Yeah.
So officials should be held to that same standard. But a judgment call, even if we hate the judgment, even if we disagree with the judgment, it's literally that person's job, that replay official that last Saturday, that was his job to check the play, apply the rule as he understood it, and he's got a human set of eyes, which are going to be imperfect.
Well, and yeah, as more and more of the pictures come out, you get a lot of fun discussions about what is it you're seeing in them. I'm maintaining it. It was a catch, and it shouldn't have been overturned. Coming up next, you have South Dakota. South Dakota's 0-2 on the season, but they had some tough battles to start the year, and a new head coach in Travis Johansson. Some really good players on this roster returning. The quarterback, all-conference guys, running back. Talk to us a little bit about South Dakota, Coach.
They are always a big physical team. They have not played a home game yet. They have not lost a home game in over 2 years. It's an incredible environment, one of the best environments in all of college football, not just in the Missouri Valley Conference or in FCS, but an incredible environment. The fans are right there, a very difficult place to play. It's a very difficult place to get to. The nearest airport is well over an hour away. There's nowhere to stay in Vermilion, and there's nowhere to stay even very close to Vermilion, where the University of South Dakota is. And then not to mention they have a very good football team the last 2 years to the playoffs, and they've got a lot of really good returners. They've got a system of – they know exactly who they are on offense or defense. They're going to be a pounded offense with a very effective play action over-the-top game. Attack in the secondary that way. It's going to be a physical football game up front for our front seven for sure, and a challenging game on the back end to have our eyes on the right place. Defensively, they are the opposite of Colorado State, so that creates some real challenges. Defensively, they know exactly who they are. They will sit in the same front and coverage for most of the game and dare you to try to block them and to try to get completions on them. Big, strong, rugged in the front seven. As you can imagine, a team like that with that kind of character and be very solid on the special teams, great at block shed, tackling, and just a very solid fundamental football team. And then the thing that we need to understand the most is that we're getting a lot of pats on the back right now, and they have an angry football team that's hungry for a win. And at the FCS level, sometimes it's, you know, the helmet logo can be a little bit of a challenge. And so, you know, USD goes down and loses to Lamar, and maybe the average UNC fan out there is going, well, shoot, they lost to Lamar, and we actually beat the CSU.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is not how it works. Lamar is a very good football team. Don't care what their name is or their logo, that they're a very good football team. They've been a team on the rise. And South Dakota had some really bad misfortune, fumbled on the one-inch line going in what should have been probably the go-ahead touchdown score. So really difficult game for them. They're at home where they win a lot.
Well, we talked about the logo thing with Shadron State, and you know, that's the thing. Like, that traditionally, like, that's a they get some really good players, and especially in this day and age. We talked about that a lot last week too, is in the day of the transfer portal, a lot of great high school players are now being overlooked, and they're going to be on those teams, on the Lamar teams for however long, but a lot of that is true. So when you look at these logo teams or the teams you can't click through on ESPN, sometimes they have really good football players for the simple fact that a lot of them are overlooked because everybody above them is just dealing with the transfer portal.
Absolutely, yeah, and we talked about some of those guys. The receiver Tommy Thompson from Fort Collins for Shadron State, he would be a really good player on CSU right now, and he was a real challenge for us to cover. All of Division II is filled with that. I think the FCS is filled with that. And I think you see that. The Mountain West and the Big Sky Conference, our game is not the only close game in the matchups between the conference. And it's fairly zipped up. Almost every one of the Big Sky teams plays a Mountain West team. It's not like we're playing the bottom of the Mountain West with the top of the Big Sky. It's just there are good players at every level of football right now. And the portal, I think, has made that even has created even more parity, contrary to what a lot of people thought the portal would do. The portal certainly can concentrating some talent at the very, very tip of the iceberg when you talk about Ohio State and Texas and places like that. They're using money to collect talent, and I don't know how long that will last because what's the price of success, you know, or what's the price of a near miss? And that's right now it's a pretty high price.
Yeah, 100%. Going more into this South Dakota game, coach, do you look at that and say, hey, there's no need to change? We're gonna run this about like we did against CSU. We are going to run that football. And you know, you guys came up with turnovers like crazy too. So on special teams, it's just a hungry group. So what do you see, you know, as far as the outlook of this game and how you guys approach South Dakota?
In a lot of ways, there is consistency. We certainly put a lot of time and effort into a scouting report and into a game plan, but it's going to fit us and our identity, who we are, who we're setting out to be. We know that we cannot win a championship without having a great defense and being able to run the football efficiently. That doesn't mean that we're going to run it more than we throw it. But we, you know, if somebody is forcing us into passing situations, we're not going to have a chance to be successful against the best teams in the – well, when I say the best teams in our league, I say the best teams in the country. Right now we've got seven of our opponents ranked, which is, you know, people talk about the SEC. There's the same number of teams in FBS as FCS.
Yeah.
Right? It's right about the same, about 130 in each group. And so you know, when they talk about the SEC being a gauntlet, oh, we play five, we play six ranked teams, and we play seven ranked teams. Oh, and we play a Mountain West team, an FBS team as well.
It's a brutal schedule. And well, in the Big Sky, I mean, we know what this conference is at the FCS level. I mean, ridiculous talent. Yeah. So every week, you get done with CSU, and then it's like, oh, you know, out of the frying pan and into the fire kind of thing, because South Dakota, that's a team that might be able to do something crazy against the CSUs of the world, too. So I expect this to be a pretty big battle.
And we have a target on our back. I explained that to our players. And I'm fortunate to have lived through that. You know, I've talked about it in here before, but I was, you know, when we turned around that Southern Utah program, we went down in our fourth year and beat UNLV by 30 points. Came back the very next week and lost at home to a pretty average North Dakota team. And that UNLV team was good. It was a good football team. They were coming off two straight wins when we beat them. If you're in 2015, how does this for eerily familiar? In 2015, our Southern Utah team went to Utah State, an in-state rival, and we led for 59 minutes. We gave up a punt return on pretty much the last play, the final play of the game.
Wow.
There was a very controversial call. They tackled one of our punt coverage guys. It was a form tackle. It was clearly a hold. Their coaches, to kind of mess with us, they put the picture of that tackle in their facility as one of the as an example of how to tackle correctly. Head across the bow, wrap up, take him down. And it was kind of just to mess with us too, right? But anyway, the point is we felt pretty good. We got a lot of pats on the back. The next week, we went to South Dakota State and lost by 40 points. We needed to be humbled. That South Dakota State team was a team our 2015 SUU team should have beat. In fact, we went through the Big Sky and were the undisputed champions. We were the top of that league that year. And South Dakota State went and lost to a Montana team that wasn't near as good as our SUU team was. So it's, you know, teams just match up differently. And the thing I'm most concerned about right now is we're facing an angry, hungry team. And if we're not angry and hungry, we've already lost.
Yeah, I mean, this what's so fun and fascinating about sports, about football especially, is a game like last Saturday, the emotions are so high. It's crazy. You're playing some great football. You're about to pull off a pretty significant upset. But sometimes you can see that. We talked about this to start the podcast. You can see that launch you to a different level, or it can be, well, that was as good as it's going to get, and we lost, and now the wind is taken out of our sails. I am really excited to see how you guys respond, or what this looks like this weekend.
Yeah, me too. It's it is a major mental test. I was talking with Coach Smiley. He texted me after the game, and you know, a lot of feel good stuff. He wants to support and knows how hard we work at it, and knows how difficult of a journey it's been. And so he was really excited about the result. And this was even moments after the game, and I said, biggest mental test of the year coming up right here. Can we put this behind us and move on?
Yeah. Did you notice I didn't ask you for a quote at the end of Saturday's game? I did text you, but I didn't ask for a quote. I thought that might be inappropriate, and you might kill me the next time you saw me. So I tried to be good on that and not go Brady media guy and just be like, Coach, well done. You guys should have won that freaking game.
Well, I appreciate that you were trying to be respectful or conscientious, but it wouldn't have bothered me a bit.
Well, so, okay, after the Saturday, I'm going to get back to the, hey, can I get a quote thing, Coach? It was, from a fan's perspective, I'll just give you this. It was a phenomenal game. I'm a UNC alum. I cover UNC. I cover CSU. People kept asking, like, who I'm rooting for. And I kept saying this. I'm rooting for a great game. And as a person, I always root for Ed Lamb. Like, I've never had a connection with a coach like you and I have had. So on that side of it, my wife is a CSU alum. She's rooting for Ed Lamb. She was devastated after you guys lost that game. And I got home and she's just like, oh, they were so close because our connection with our kids and all that stuff, we've talked about that. But she knows the songs. She knows the proud to be CSU Ram. And she's rooting for the UNC Bears in that game. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That is really cool. It's one of the – for a couple of years now, I've talked about I would love for the state of Colorado – to be either green or black, you know, the ones that aren't UNC fans, Greeley, whatever. And then everybody is a UNC fan in addition to being a CSU fan or being a Colorado fan. It's very much like that in the state of Utah. You're red or blue, you're BYU or Utah, and then everyone is a fan of Utah State, the kind of the young or the up and comer, the team with less resources. And then you pick between Weber State and Southern Utah, and it's really cool to see a football community come together like that. And I think UNC's missed out on that for a lot of decades of just being a team that everybody can root. Hey, that's our in-state brother there, and we're all UNC fans. We're the only FCS team in this state, and so I would love to see a day where CSU and UNC and University of Colorado are on the road, and their fans come out here, make the drive, and cheer us on.
Now, there was a real big part of me that was – I knew the game was at South Dakota, but I was like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's going to be here because CSU's off this weekend. I had so many people going with that sentiment saying, hey, when CSU's not at home, you better believe I'm going to go check out UNC now. And that's what this is supposed to be, and you're on that right path, and it's fun to be on this journey with you, kind of. I'm not with you all the way, but being able to do this podcast has been a lot of fun on that side.
Well, you've seen me drag myself in here a lot of weeks, and this is another one where it's been a long road, longer than we hoped. There have been so many close losses that could have been wins. Our record could be so much better right now, and yet at the same time, somehow parallel to that story, I feel like we've been linearly progressing in a lot of ways. Except for the on-field results. And so I'm anxious to see a time when that starts to show through.
Yeah, we discussed this, but even last year in a lot of those games, in the first portion of the season, before quarterbacks started dropping like flies, there were competitive games. Even if the score at the end didn't necessarily look like that, if you watch the games, you go, okay, these are all close games against really good teams, and just not the results you wanted. But it just feels like, you know, that the breaking point is close. I mean, do you get that sense? Like, we do get that feeling that we're about to bust through this thing.
Well, that's the advantage I have, is from where I sit and from where I work every day, I don't really have to judge on the on-field results. I get that I'm judged on that, and I'm accepting of that, and willing to hear anybody's criticism. and they're all valid. If somebody's got an opinion and they're actually paying attention, I'm sure they've got valid criticisms. But I see our players going from, you know, the culture that I walked into was, hey, Wednesday night is bear crawl night and the boys are downtown at ladies night and that kind of thing, to now Wednesday after practice, our leaders stepping up and saying, nobody's going out tonight. Mm. We got a job this week. And then, you know, I was walking through our facility late last night working, and I walked by and there's one of our meeting rooms. I can see the video going, but it's not the coach's meeting room. It's a player position meeting room. So I walk in. There's our top 8 or 9 DBs watching South Dakota.
Wow.
Making their calls, making their checks. That's not a meeting that we set up. It's not something we asked them to do. That's the type of team that we have. So, yeah, that's anyone who wants to talk about, hey, that result at CSU was really exciting. Thanks for the efforts. I can see the team coming around. I just say thank you.
Yeah.
But in my mind, there were already signs of this a long time ago.
I brought this up yesterday, and just that's a montage right there, seeing the DBs in a room late at night studying stuff. They weren't told to be there. You said this 15 times over the last year and a half, but they don't make movies based on the teams that are supposed to win. So when they make this movie, that will be one of the scenes where you're just walking around late at night and you see your defensive backs in there studying film when they weren't told to do that at that moment. Yeah. I love that stuff.
Well, you can see it right there, right? Like that CSU was playing against a logo, and their fans are disappointed, but they had a last-second interception to win a game that was back and forth in the fourth quarter. You know, like it should be a great moment, but it's not because the logo they were playing isn't respected by their fans.
And that was one of
they don't write books about that. They don't make movies about that moment.
100%. But and I think that's what I wanted to get into yesterday was like, I wanted to be careful because all this talk of, oh, CSU, they're going to fire Jay Norvell after all this stuff. That talk was going on a lot longer, way before you guys took the field against CSU. But I want to be very clear that this isn't like CSU should be embarrassed that they were close to UNC. The ones that follow this program are seeing the building blocks. And I think at the end of the season, and that's what I talked about yesterday, CSU is going to look at that game and go, wow, that wasn't a bad win because UNC turned out to be a really good football program. That's the belief here. And that's why we get up here and we do this podcast every single week, Coach. So that's what I want Rams fans to fully understand is like that's not at the end of the day, that's not going to be looked at as that big of a deal.
Yeah, I would like nothing more than to see CSU go on and be successful and be proud of their victory over UNC, not feel like it was some type of escape over little old Greeley State. We're working hard to build this thing, and we're doing it with players right from this area and from the state. And I think that showed up in the game as well. A lot of our most active players that had their best games were these young Colorado kids.
I love that. And again, you talked about the high school coaches. I would imagine the recruits that are on the fence, all that kind of stuff. Probably didn't hurt.
We had a few commitments this week. They were at the game. They were hosted by CSU. Now, I want to be clear. CSU had probably 100 recruits at that game. I'm not saying we went in and stole their recruits. They cannot sign 100 players. They haven't offered every player that was hosted on that sideline. But there were kids on that sideline hosted by CSU given a game ticket that called us after the game and said, I'm in.
That's amazing. Yeah, cool. I had a feeling that was I didn't ask directly, but I had a feeling that would be something maybe over time. But you're telling me like that weekend, bam, you know, they're in.
And you know I can't say their names.
If I knew their names, I could say them and then you could just go. Interesting.
Confirmed.
Yeah.
No, I can confirm recruitment.
Okay.
Not.
I'll do some digging.
Not any details.
Yeah. It's funny because I had Lindsay Oates on the show a couple weeks ago, and I flat out brought up Steve Smiley's daughter's name and said, oh, that's so cool, keeping it in the family, Bears, all this stuff. She's like, yeah, can't. Although I saw her Twitter, and she retweeted the tweet that said Avery's going to be a Bear, and I'm like, but you can't acknowledge. I don't know the rules, but I'll ask anyway, and you just shut me down.
Yeah, she probably liked it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You can
like it, but not retweet it. Lindsay doesn't make mistakes. So I'm fairly confident she liked it.
That's the one.
Not retweet.
Well, I know. And then nobody has to worry about you retweeting anything. You're never on social media, so you don't have to worry about retweeting stuff.
My account's pretty deceased. It actually was never alive, to be fair.
I tag you all the time. You probably have so many missed notifications from me on the X account.
That X account was created by a BYU recruiting intern. And so I don't have.
Do you even know your Twitter handle name? Do you know what it is?
No. But I know that I changed it. I had to call the kid and say, "Hey, how do I get into this? Because I can't be at BYU Lamb anymore. I need to be at UNC Lamb UNC or something like that."
Yeah.
And because I do, the only thing I use it for actively is to direct message recruits, because that's the easiest way to get in contact with them. Is through the X.
I can't even get a follow on here. I can't message you on this because you don't follow me on there, Coach. So
is that considered rude?
Well, if you were active on it, I would be like, okay. Coach, come on, what the heck? But I also know that you're not active on it, so I'll let it slide.
My daughter said I might be one of the top people in the country for followers who have never posted anything. Yeah. I have one of the highest number of followers for somebody who's never posted anything.
You have never posted anything.
I've never posted anything.
No. There's nothing on here. Wow.
How many followers do I have?
4.5 thousand.
1,000?
Yeah.
Is that a lot? That's
a lot if you've never posted anything.
Cool.
Like, that's a phenomenal amount if you've never. Imagine what happens if you post something. I hope I'm here for that.
I might lose followers. That's why I don't.
Coach, I appreciate you. I'm sorry we had to spend more than half an hour talking about the catch or the overturn, but it is the news, and I really wanted to get your thoughts on it. So I really appreciate you going there, man.
Well, Arian, this is fair, and I appreciate everything you do and have done for us, and all the patience and belief that you've shown. Our team in our facility is talking nothing about CSU this week. It's all about South Dakota, and that's really where I'm going and living. But happy to come here and speak to our fans, speak to the community, and all fair game to look back on the previous game as part of this process.
All right, my friend. Coach, I appreciate you. Shout out to
my dad.
To your dad,
my dad
too.
In the studio. I'm the third, so same name. He's Ed Lamb as well. And he did not want to. He said, "I'll come with you. I want to see what it looks like, but I don't want to get on."
Kept
the mic.
Asking he what yeah. he. I think at some point we'll get him. We'll
Behind
get him
the
on
scenes
here at
guy.
Some point. Yeah. Coach, appreciate you so much, my friend, and we'll look forward to catching up with you next week.
Thanks, Brady.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend Mark Larson with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.